Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the town where the jazz is swinging high. It's the New Orleans Outsider with Chris Goffmeyer. My, we may be outsiders, but our love for New Orleans is true. So come along as I share it all with you. Sights and sounds, food and drinks, we're here to take a ride with New Orleans Outsider as our guide.
And here are your hosts, Chris Goff, Peter Newkirch, and Justin Appleberry.
Well, fine dining is at a premium in New Orleans, and when we go down there, the three of us are pretty much foodies, and we think this place is one of the top of the list. We are going to be talking about Commander's Palace in the Garden District in New Orleans. Hello, welcome to NOLA Outsider. I am Chris, along with Justin and Peter. And guys, when I first heard about Commander's Palace, it was my parents telling me that they went to dinner in New Orleans at this really fancy place called Commander's Palace. And the way that they were describing it in this garden district with this name Commander's Palace, I just, you know, it sounded like something I would see like the Vanderbilt in the Carolinas or something. It sounded like this majestic, you know, castle-like place that, what is this, a military place? I didn't really understand what it was. And today we're going to find out the meaning of it, because I had no idea what Commander's Palace stood for before I looked up for stuff for tonight. But tell me about the first time, Peter, that you heard about or went to Commander's Palace.
Well, I just want to start off by saying that with your level of excitement in that intro, I think there are people who are ready to go and they don't even know what it's about.
Exactly.
100% in already. That's the level of excitement you're already adding to this.
I can't stop not being excited about New Orleans. You know that.
We're cooking with fire, boys.
Yeah. I don't remember what the first time was. They get a little jumbled up for me. Certainly the standout times I can think of is when we went and went with my wife and we had a great time. And sure. Those jazz brunch starters were absolutely amazing. You know, we'll definitely have to talk about the martinis. Oh, yeah. That's iconic part of it. And it's just a completely iconic restaurant, perhaps the most iconic restaurant of New Orleans. I think if you ask anyone outside of New Orleans to name one restaurant, that will probably be top of the list.
I would assume so. I mean, and before I get to you, Justin, like one thing, Peter, like you, with your background as a chef, obviously working in Chicago, I mean, you had to, I mean, there's people that I know that went to Chicago down to New Orleans to try to be a sous chef there. What was the thought of Commander's Palace outside of New Orleans where you were working growing up in the food industry?
Oh yeah. The premier restaurant of New Orleans. And that's, you know, and that was at the point I'm well after Prudhomme came on, but he had established that as the place to cook at. If you were going to go, that's where you made your name, was Commander's. People knew that it was a Brendan restaurant, but it was still, that was the one to go to. It's outside the quarters in the Garden District. It's in a gorgeous neighborhood right across from the cemetery. Mm-hmm. Two, three blocks off of Magazine Street, a couple blocks the other way, just gorgeous houses everywhere. You just iconic in both what it is and where it's at.
Yeah, Justin, when you went down the first time, I was with you there and we went there. And of course, I think what I told you is that you have to wear a collar. You got to wear some nice shoes. No torn up jeans or anything. Not that you like to dress up. You do that with your job all the time. But like, what did you think about leading up to it and then seeing it?
Well, that had been my first experience outside of the French Quarter. So what I really enjoyed is the Uber ride over and seeing a lot of the classic houses. And, once you start getting into that area, the Garden District is, you know, I'm sure we'll get more into detail on that as in episodes to come. But it felt like a place, even though I'm not sure what their formal dress code is, where you wanted to kind of dress up a little nicer and be a little more, dandy with it. It's sort of unassuming on the outside, but when you get in there, the just sort of the vibe you got was like, yeah, this is the spot. This you see all the awards, you see, you know, kind of the presentation that the staff puts together. I think Chris, ours was the jazz brunch, right? That we went
it
to.
Was.
Yeah. So just the it had just this whole uniqueness, this whole vibe to it that, man, I don't know that you could duplicate anywhere in the world. It's just very unique.
Classy without being stuffy.
That's exactly right, Peter. That's the perfect way to put it.
And you're probably right. One of the best mixes of, clearly there's a lot of locals, you know, people who are walking there from their houses to people who live in the city who are coming in for an event, mixed very, very well with a tourist population that comes in because that is the place to go.
No, you're absolutely right. It's funny because I talk to people all the time, and you talk about it being the premier restaurant in New Orleans, but I think people argue it's the premier restaurant in the world. I mean, it is in the United States. I mean, me and Justin have done this several times when we are, and me and you, Peter, as well, but when we're counting down the days to New Orleans, as you know, the anticipation mounts and we're looking up all the lists of like the best restaurants in America, Commander's Palace is always on there, top 10, top five. And, you know, like you said, it's funny. When I go down there and I tell people like, hey, I don't normally go to lunch or dinner with my wife and spend $250. That's not a normal thing for me. But in New Orleans for several, maybe two meals, three tops on a 4-day visit, it will be that, mostly because of the alcohol. But what you're saying is correct. The level of experience that you get there, because I love the experience at Commander's Palace. That's as much as anything. Is the food is obviously great, but it's just the whole presentation, the whole like the seating. You said it was unassuming, Justin, but the loud turquoise and white out of it. I mean, it's very like stands out like a candy striper building, you know.
It does, but it doesn't stand out as like the best restaurant. You know, when you look on the outside, no. If you're driving by, you're like, that is the premier restaurant in the United States.
No, you're right. Yeah. It's like just like Peter said, it's 10 feet away from like a you know, 200-year-old cemetery, right. And like people are walking their dogs like 10 feet away. So that's what's interesting about New Orleans. Like these like jewels are in the middle of these neighborhoods, and you would have no idea if it didn't have a sign outside. But Peter's absolutely correct. You can walk into Commander's Palace and have their top meal, whatever expense it is, you know, and pick the best of everything. And the meal price is going to be equal to or less than a lot of restaurants in the French Quarter that aren't nearly as good as Commander's Palace. And even though I have seen them kick people out for wearing shorts or flip-flops, because there's very few restaurants that I've been to in New Orleans that keep that standard still because of our society. And we're all pretty casual these days. I love it too. Don't get me wrong. But I have seen people get kicked out of there nicely, but they do not have a jacket requirement anymore. They used to be a thing. They used to have care. You know, the Galator still has jackets, you know, available for men for dinners. But to be fair, full transparency, I've never been to Commander's Palace for dinner. It's always been for a version of lunch, whether it's regular lunch or jazz lunch. And I think Peter, you said you'd like to try dinner there sometime.
Yes, we haven't done dinner. Maybe next time we're down there, we head over for dinner. I would like to get a seersucker suit just to wear to Commander's Palace.
And a barbershop hat. I mean, it would just fit in there perfectly.
It does. It just makes me want to feel like I need to dress up for respect when I go there for some reason. I'm like, I want to wear the jacket and just pay the respects to it. But you're right. That's an important point about the price. I mean, you know, I've been to joints here in Kansas City that aren't, you know, are just standard restaurants that I'm walking out of there dropping more than I would at Commander's Palace.
You're right. No, I mean, my dad will go to it's a restaurant with a top chef here at the Riverboat, the gambling place here in Kansas City, and spend way more than he would at Commander's Palace. And like, I just like to compare because we go to Muriel's, we go to GW Finn's, we go to these other places, and they're as much or more than Commander's Palace. So I think that's something interesting in case people are sort of like trepidatious about going because they expect it to be just like off the charts expensive. And believe me, again, I don't spend $250, $300 on meals very often, but we will do it down there occasionally if we go to someplace like Commander's. And like I said, half of that is usually with alcohol. But if you look at the history of this place, and I do want to talk about our experiences there when we were actually there, because that's sort of the fun of it. We've all had different experiences. I had one recently that I thought was pretty funny, but you know, I had no idea what it was named after, but it was named by Emil Commander, and he opened the restaurant in 1893. And he was the son of an Italian immigrant. He opened a saloon and restaurant at the corner of Washington Avenue and Coliseum Street in the Garden District, which would later become Commander's Palace. In the early 1900s, the restaurant attracted wealthy neighborhood residents and later gourmets from around the world, and it became a culinary destination. In the 20s, it sold. In the 40s, it sold. It went through all the wars, and it continued to be open. But finally, in modern times, we've all heard, if you've gone down to New Orleans, you've heard of the Brennan family. You know, there's many offshoots of the Brennans. There's Ralph, there's Dickie, there's other people involved, Ella. But the Brennan family bought Commander's Palace in 1969. They still control it today. And like Peter said, Paul Prudhomme was a huge chef there, and I do want to talk about him in depth here in a minute. But Emeril Lagasse, Meg Bickford is there now. They've had some major culinary figures there, and
it's a who's who. It's a who's who.
It is, and like you said, Justin, like you walk in, you see all the James Beers awards all over the walls, and like you know, you obviously don't see that every day,
right?
No, and you know, I. It's not to throw shade at any of the Michelin star restaurants, but I feel that if you're going to measure the quality of the experience for what you're paying for, is Commander's is expensive, but in ratio to what you're going to spend at a Michelin star restaurant, I think you're getting the better quality out of Commander's, and Commander's beats every one of them on history.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're just sitting there talking about this is 1893. So we're 130 years into this exact location. I did not know Emil Commander existed before looking into this, but it is interesting that they've kept their name. I do love that about your tradition in New Orleans. They do love their history. I love how they don't allow every once in a while you'll see like a Bubba Gump Shrimp Company was actually in the French Quarter, but there's really no chains. It's all, and if it is owned by a conglomerate corporation, you wouldn't know it because they don't really show that much. You do have a Landry's there. You have a couple things that are sort of a little different, but going back to where we're talking about today, Commander's, just the history and keeping the name and keeping it what it is super cool. In the 1980s, Ella Brennan was one of the, she has become the big matriarch figurehead of this place in our lifetime. She made it a culinary destination as well, and she is the one that hired a lot of these big names that we know in our life as top chefs. Let's talk about Paul Prudhomme real quick, Peter, because I know he's one of my all-time favorites. As Justin and I have joked, he obviously looks like Dom DeLuise, and so growing up, I was a big fan of him in Cannonball Run. But Paul Prudhomme ended up being a guy that they plucked out of Cajun country, and he was the first one, if I'm not incorrect, I believe he was the first guy who didn't have an extensive like French background, some culinary like, you know, awardsmanship going into being this top chef. And Ella Brennan, I believe she's the one that gave him this opportunity to become like the top guy, that she just plucked this portly man out of the Cajun country and made him the top chef of one of the greatest restaurants in the world. And man, did he make a huge difference.
Yeah, he was a relative unknown and just staked his claim to that restaurant and took the idea of Creole and Cajun and elevated to the idea of hot cuisine. And, you know, and he would have been in right in the middle of what was Nouvelle cuisine. And he's like, now we're going back, you know, to a generation before, we're going back to Escoffier. We're bringing back the high concepts of cooking, and then layered that over his traditional Cajun cooking.
I mean, he was the one that created black and red fish, correct?
Yes.
I mean, Justin, you know it. That's a staple everywhere when we go there.
That, yeah, I eat it at least once every day when I'm there. So Paul made his bones at Commander's Palace, right? He had no previous experience. He just started there.
He had previous experience, but not, he had not made his name anywhere else.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, It seems like through the years they've really plucked relative unknowns going into it, but obviously they've worked their way up in the restaurant industry up to this point. But they weren't like superstars going in, but they were superstars coming out. That's what it seemed. Paul Prudhomme was there from 1975 to 1980, and I've watched many I've watched a documentary on him. I have a lot of his cookbooks. I mean, the cookbook of him, I can't remember the name of it right off, but where he's sitting on the front with all the mountain of Cajun food in front of him. That is like one of the biggest selling cookbooks of all time. Later in life, he decided sort of like Paula Deen and everybody and Kevin Belton, they decided they needed to cut back on the butter and the fats. So he did start cooking a little healthier near the end of his life. But I still use his spices today. They still put that out with his name on it. And he was, I just think it's a very cool story that they took a guy from relative obscurity from a lower level, lower economic area, and sort of trusted him to take this, you know, what could be considered a very uppity place into the new century. I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, it speaks to an eye for talent for sure. Their staff. There to pluck.
Because Lugosi doesn't take over, I think, until 91.
He takes over not too long after Prudhomme. He comes in 82 to 90, and there was a little gap there, and so I don't have every single head chef that was there, but it goes Paul Prudhomme till 80, and then Emeril Lagasse, who I think most people our age would know who that is. 82 to 90, he's there. There's still an Emeril's there. There's still several Emeril related restaurants in New Orleans, but you know, he becomes a huge star on Food Network after this. He even gets his own sitcom on NBC for one season that I've reviews on, that they name it the worst sitcom of all time. But that nevertheless, he had a big catchphrase, bam, and he became a huge star. He did.
Yeah. And the same way, he was not a previously known chef outside of that area. And Ella Brennan took a chance on him and obviously worked out great for everybody. And then those people that are in between, they continued on. They weren't necessarily just placeholders. I mean, they all added that everybody that goes to that restaurant adds in something to it, you know, and the current chef Meg, I mean, she's taking it to another level where they're really expanding into that. They're referencing it as from dirt to plate, not just farm to plate.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, she has always a ton of like cool menus. You know, even living in Kansas City, I get to see I see all their culinary menus and all these special events they have there, because they're really sort of like branching out a little bit. Now they have their own sort of merchandising. Now they have their own little coffee shop to the side there now. You know, they're sort of doing a little bit more outreach, it seems, on just the global scale because of the internet now. Maybe they didn't do that as much. But yes, it goes Prudhomme, then Emeril Lagasse, then Jamie Shannon from 1990 to 2001, and then Tori McPhail was the guy that's been there the longest, really, recently, from 2002 to 2020, and he won a James Beard Award while he was there. He focused on farm to table first, like you said. Now they went to dirt to table with Megan Bickford. She's been there since 2020. But I mean, like, if you look at this, and I know Peter, I know you have for sure the Kitchen Queens television show on PBS. Meg Bickford is talked about, and she's on there a lot. You know, that's sort of a cool Kitchen Queens is a series on PBS where they look at female head chefs on a lot of the restaurants in New Orleans, and Meg Bickford is it's cool that they show the inside of the kitchen at Commander's Palace and show what her ideas are. But she's obviously very young, relatively speaking, and I don't know, she could be there for a very long time, really.
Yeah, she could 20 plus years if she wanted to.
Yeah. Paul Prudhomme, by the way, if one thing that I really I've told you guys that I always was upset that I was not able to go to K-Paul's, which he spun off. And I believe the story was he wanted to start a restaurant for his wife for him and his wife to work at together. And I think he sort of started that while he was still sort of working in and out of Commander's Palace. So it was called K-Paul's, and it went out. He passed away, you know, 5-10 years ago, and his family kept it going until COVID came, and then that finally knocked it out once and for all. But he was big on that one at K Paul's. He was big on the wild game, as we've talked about. Like, we would walk by and he would have a lot of, he would have some fish, but it was a lot of rabbit and other game that is not normal to the regular goers of some of these restaurants, I guess. Peter, I know you love it, but rabbit wasn't like top of my list. But yeah, he has quite the history there in his family. So I wanted to mention that about Prudhomme.
His first cookbook was one of the first, it was, I believe, the first cookbook I ever bought, but it was a used copy. And it's one of four cookbooks that I've kept over the years. Cause I believe it's a foundational cookbook.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's like I said, I can't remember the name of it offhand, but it's a picture of him at the very top wearing his like signature white hat. Looks like a beret type style hat, or I don't know what kind of hat that is, but he always wore it. And then he had just a mountain of like Cajun food underneath him as he was smiling on top. It's a classic cookbook. And yes, I have it upstairs and I use it relatively often and at my house. But let's talk about let's talk about some stories that we've had when we've actually gone there. You mentioned that. Let's talk about first the bar, I guess, Peter, because one of the first things that I was able to try out there was their legendary 25-cent martinis. Now, I guess these started at Brennan's originally in the French Quarter. And one of the aunts of the Brennan family told the family that we should start doing this at Commander's Palace. And I was reading an article about it, and the current Brennan said that they wanted her to shut up. They respected her, but we did it so she'd shut up. So they added the 25-cent martini to Commander's Palace. And I think it's changed dates through the years because now, if I'm not mistaken, it's only on Thursday and Friday lunches. That's it. You can't get any other time. But you get a maximum of three martinis there, 25 cents each, and there's a Cosmopolitan, a Commander's Palace martini, and a melon martini. And the first time I went there, Peter, you remember that day well, because I had those three followed a few hurricanes, and I went to go smoke a cigar with you later that day, and I couldn't stand up. So it was a good day.
Yeah, yeah. We it's not a large cemetery, but we got lost in the cemetery. And just remember it being very hot, and we had our jackets on because we wanted to dress appropriately, and those immediately got stripped off, and it was a great afternoon. But yeah, those are full size martinis too. This is not a 25-cent glass with 25 cents. These are full size, full strength martinis. I'm not a huge martini fan, but and I'll skip anything with melon in it. But the Commander's one is a classic, and they make one of the great Cosmos.
They did. You tried some of those, didn't you, Justin?
Yeah, I did. I am not a martini fan either, but for 25 cents, I, by God, powered through three of them. No problem.
I was going to say, I think we're all in the same boat. I don't really like any liquor drinks in an up glass. I hate as a male. I hate it when they put my Manhattans in an up glass.
Yeah.
But when in Rome, when they're 25 cents and you're going to be saving, I don't know, $100 per couple on the drinks, I'll put one down or three. Yes. But I always think it's funny because, and Charlotte always, your wife, Peter, she always quotes this, because why only three? Because that's enough. And that's true, because I've seen people like this is a story of the last time I went there. I went there with my parents and my kids and my wife, and we went there for a lunch, and I mistakenly booked a Wednesday thinking there would be the 25 cent martinis, and they were not, but I was still like, hey, I'm still having a Commander's martini, cause that's what I was thinking about. So, Commander's martini is a blue curacao and vodka. And you know, that's how you basically make it with that. A little sweet and sour.
Sub it with gin, we found out.
You can do gin or vodka with sweet and sour and blue curacao. Made them here now. Not nearly as good as when you drink them somewhere else, like everything. But that's how it always is. But we were there, and what's funny is when you go and have a time there, my kids were, you know, it's sort of weird taking your kids there, but I wanted them to experience it because my parents hadn't been there in a while. And they're not anti-kid at all, but they don't promote wanting children there. However, they have a sort of a hidden kids menu there. They do not talk about it, but when you got there, because I'm thinking like, what are these kids going to have? They're going to have these. I don't think they'll eat the steak tartare, or, you know, they don't have. I don't see chicken fingers here. We're sort of in trouble. We're going to have some kind of steak for them. Anyway, they said, hey, no, we have chicken fingers with little fries, or a little filet with fries. I'm like, sure. And one of my kids got one of each, right? They brought it out. And by the way, the kids meal there was, I believe it was $18 or $19 a person. And in the quarter, same thing, was like $25, $26 at Brennan's. So it's just another example of, and it's the same family, but Commander's is cheaper. So what was funny is, adjacent to all this going on, there's another table over here with your stereotypical local older sort of debutante like women wearing their huge hats and their nice dresses, having like, they sat there for an hour before they even decided what they were going to order for like an hors d'oeuvre. You know, they're going to spend like 5 hours there. So they're drinking it up, which is fine. And so my kids' food comes out, and they had these little fries. They're like sort of like the little hash brown, like size little pieces of potato that are like the long pieces of, like, you know, spaghetti length, you know, like,
right.
And so they were, the fries were like that. They were like really cool little fries. And so the two ladies had started their three martini lunch, and this lunch is going to be like 5 hours long. You can tell that. And they look over and they're like, they're whispering like, what is that? Those look good. What is that? They start trying to find it on the menu. They're looking, they're scanning. They keep looking at Gunner's plate. They keep, you know, they cannot find it. So finally they ask one of like the busboy guy that walks by like, hey, what's that over there? Like, oh, that's the kid menu. You know, that's the fries on the kid menu. And, you know, I thought they're like, oh, shucks or whatever. Nope. 10 minutes later, here comes a big plate of those fries of those two ladies in the middle of their second martinis. And I'm like, oh, man, they're probably pissed that, you know, we even, you know, showed them that was an available thing for them to make for the two ladies. I mean, they're, you know, they're probably 70 years old. So anyway, that's hilarious. The kind of place.
That's the level of service that they'll
that's get. Right.
Oh, I mean, you could get anything you want there, I'm sure. I mean, you could probably ask for almost anything you wanted under the sun if you really wanted. But, you know, as much as they are sort of like pro their dress policy, they are pretty, I mean, for what it is, it's pretty laid back. It really, I know it's weird to say, but I mean, I think that's sort of a calling card of New Orleans in general, though. You go to these places, even if it's like Muriel's, or, and that's not even as fancy as Commander's, but GW Finn's, like, people expect to see what people are doing in New Orleans there. You know, there's going to be a lot of drinking and it's not stuffy. And Commander's Palace, for what it is, like you said, Peter, from the beginning, that's a common thread we're going to be talking about. It is not at all in any way feel uncomfortable that I'm not using the right fork.
Yeah. Right. There's somehow they have this great balance of classy and proper without being stuffy. You're never going to be made. You're never going to feel that you're being looked down upon by the staff or other customers.
Yeah, not a lick of pretentiousness at all from the staff. It's very welcoming. It's not pretentious, but it's just, you know, that classy environment.
So, Peter, I know you love to look at menus and sort of study what you're going to eat before you go to a place. And so do you recall when you first started looking at these menus of Commander's Palace, what the first thing that caught your eye that you wanted to try?
The tobacco quail. You know, that's kind of become one of their standout dishes that I don't think that ever comes off the menu, but it is just it's their – there, it's the Texas quail, and it's just such an iconic flavor to that restaurant. I remember they're doing things, you know, we had this discussion about Muriel's with the pork chop, but I would say the same thing. Their pork chop is just takes the idea to a whole nother level. And they really do this, that whole dirt to plate idea. They're using truly local things. Like they are putting satsuma on the restaurant, which, you know, what's satsuma? Well, it's a citrus fruit, you know, but it's so much more. It has a very distinct flavor that blends so well into Creole cooking.
How about you, Justin? What was the first thing that you remember you wanted to order there?
Well, I remember the last thing I ordered. I can't remember the first time when I was there. We did the jazz brunch. I remember loving it and thinking that's one of the best meals, but that steak that we had, I can't remember the steak dish, what it was, but it was literally you could cut it with a spoon. I think I gave you a piece of it. I was like, dude, this is like the most tender piece, you know, and coming from Kansas City where steak is, you know, it's as abundant as like we put it on our lunch bread here. Yeah, I was just amazed by the tenderness and juiciness of the steak. It was just blew me away. I was speechless after that meal.
Yeah, I mean, when you go, I think that's a common thread. Like when anyone I take goes to Commander's Palace, it is, it's one of those things. So I've learned through life that I don't like to give people really high expectations ever because whether it's the cynic in me or not, I enjoy going in with lower expectations. So everything is awesome. Okay. Cause if it, usually most places do not live up to the hype, but I tend to overhype, not overhype, but I hype up big time Commander's Palace because I just tell people, look, I just had friends this past year I took for the first time. Look, this is going to be like the most unique situation you've ever had in terms of just the experience of walking in. You're going to walk in, it's going to seem like a really fancy menu, which fancy restaurant, which it is, but you're going to have, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't know, Peter, like we've gone to Antoine's, we've gone to Muriel's, we've gone to GW Finn's. They all have your, you know, they all have that level of, I have like six or seven different servers helping me do one thing at the table, which is always sort of makes you feel like regal in that way. But I don't know. At Commander's Palace is just a new level. It feels like of all the tradition that Antoine's used to have prior to COVID, where there was probably, you know, multi-generation people working there, I feel like that is still preserved at Commander's Palace. I don't know that for sure, but it certainly seems like people that are there, obviously they're doing pretty well, I'm sure, with the tips and the amount of money they're making there. So I understand why people stay there for multiple generations. But when you're there, it's just the experience is just like none other. And I tell people, you know, that come from Kansas City, we have plenty of fine dining restaurants here, but we don't really have a situation where I can really explain apples to apples, like when you walk in, what you're about to discover. And everyone walks out with like, man, that was, if not one of the greatest meal I've ever had.
Yeah, I think that it just kind of occurred to me, perhaps because it started off as a family restaurant and stayed that way for several decades and generations and through multiple owners, that they never let that go, whether it was intentional or not. So even though people kept intentionally raising the level of expectation of what the food and the service would be, they never forgot that they started off as a family restaurant. And family, not being family, just family owned, but for families to come in too.
That's a fair point.
You know, Peter, you're always good at, like, we've talked about this and I'll continue to talk about this every place we go. You're good about like challenging people to try new things. So of course, like when I see a lacquered Texas quail on the menu prior to, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago, I don't necessarily think I'd be like, I need that. Right. But when I went there and you're like, you know, I think you and Travis were both talking about it or getting it. I don't remember if everybody did, but so this quail that they have, like you said, is always there. I've had multiple times there and I never am sad about getting it. They have the smoked boudin, stuffed quail over bacon and apple cider braised cabbage. And then it has that crystal hot sauce pulp and sticky cognac au jus. I mean, it's just like something that it just makes my mouth water thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's so good. I mean, a quail is obviously not a big bird, so not a ton of food there, but it's just the presentation, the food is so good. And if you're not like a person that wants to try something like quail, they always have a shrimp dish. They always have a fish dish. They always have a red meat dish. And that's for the jazz brunch. I mean, like I said, the dinner menu might slightly change. I know, Justin, you are a big fan of, did you always get the soup there? Did you?
Yeah. The turtle soup.
Turtle soup.
Yeah.
I'll share
you. Yeah. Oh yeah. Fantastic.
And I think they probably have the best turtle soup in this city.
Yeah.
And that's saying something.
Yeah. Cause everybody makes it, but I do believe there's to be the most outstanding. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, you just, and it's more that you just make a, you can make a whole day, even if you're staying in the Garden District, you can make a day out of going there and wandering around. But if you're staying in any other neighborhood, if you catch the trolley and the streetcar over there, that's a whole journey in and of itself. You get the anticipation of getting into the Garden District. You see the neighborhoods change and you get to get in and you walk, I think it's 2 blocks from there to the restaurant. And then you, like I said, you can wander through the cemeteries and wander over through the neighborhood and just, it has a beautifully, and just becomes a whole day's experience. And that all stems from that restaurant.
Now I'm not quite mature enough to enjoy a day like that you just described, Peter, because my parents, like, their favorite thing to do, which instead of going to, you know, Fritzl's and doing what I do now, they would always spend time going to the Garden District, taking the trolley, the streetcar over there, you know, enjoying the architecture and the huge houses. They love that kind of stuff. And yes, this is plopped right in the middle of that. We used to be able to go across street to the cemetery and take the tour, but for years now they've had it locked up. And I think you have to make some kind of special arrangement to go over there if you ever wanted to check it out. I don't know if that, I think we asked last time and I believe they said there was some vandalism. So that's why they've been locking it up.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Is that with you when they said that?
Yeah. We were together when they told us that.
Yeah, it's too bad because it was it's sort of a cool thing to come out and like check that out, because obviously with the history down there and the age of everything, it's just very cool to see the above ground cemeteries, and that's one right there across the street from you. But you know, just walking around the neighborhoods, we were at, when I just did the St. Patrick's Day limo pub crawl, there's a bar just a few blocks away from that that we stopped at. So it's definitely Peter, you would probably know more than of all of us three, but, you know, like you just mentioned, the Garden District, it's its own area. If you're only used to going to the French Quarter, the Garden District in itself, which is anchored, I think, by Commander's Palace and many other shops and restaurants around there, but, you know, obviously not as compact. You have to walk a little bit to find things. But the houses around there are obviously seven-figure houses wherever you look. And the upkeep is awesome. And it's, and that, like you said, is an awesome day or two that you could spend just doing that if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, going back to, you mentioned about the menu, a lot of restaurants, even of the same level as Commander's, from their brunch menu to their lunch menu to their dinner, they may be changing one or two things. Commander's is really good about having distinctly different menus. So it's a different experience if whether you're going to lunch or you're going to dinner.
Yeah, no. And that's good because it makes you obviously want to try everything, you know, and you want to go back for multiple trips and try different things.
Have either of you two been to dinner? I've never been to dinner.
No.
I've never been to dinner. And I always regret, because I always want to go to La Petite Bleu, their coffee shop, which has an outstanding menu in and of itself. And you know, that's where you want to do the sandwich, something faster, you go there. But outstanding menu on that too. There's no downgrade in going there from Commander's.
No, we walked in there. One of my kids wanted to go see it, and we walked in there, and it's a cool little, it's connected to the building just to the side. They made like a little side sort of cafe, small diner-ish area there. And it is very nice as well. And they, like I said, they're starting to branch out into more merchandise. They have some plates, some, you know, obviously they've always had their cookbooks and stuff, but they have, seems like they've had like some teas, some things that they're sort of branching out merchandise wise. But yeah, it's the Jazz Brunch is always fun to go to, as we've mentioned here several times. If you go there, what you're going to get is a trio of musicians walking around. And, you know, let's talk about, we haven't mentioned the spread of the place. Okay. You can go to Commander's Palace and sit in a different place every single time you go there, and it would be a completely different experience. I've sat probably in three or four different areas of that, 'cause it's so big. I mean, there's a downstairs, there's an upstairs, there's the side room that has like full open windows that you can see like more of the Garden District out there. There's more of the downstairs sort of dining area has a little bit more of a sort of, you know, romantic flair to it, I guess. And there's all these little, you know, offshoot rooms that you could sit in. I think just with you guys, I've sat in probably two or three different areas. I mean, the spread of this place is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's when you look on the outside, you don't know how vast it is. I know last time we actually, when we were going to our table, we walked through the kitchen, didn't we?
Yeah, so we which is a normal thing. Like a normal thing in New Orleans. Like I've had to do this several times. Like you walk through the kitchen to get somewhere, which is just a funny, like quirky thing they have down there.
It's deceptively big, and that's just the physical restaurant. And then you got Le Petit Bleu on joined to it, and they have that whole outside area that they use for events and everything else. They pretty much take up that entire block.
Oh yeah, the whole thing is, it's massive, and And when you walk in, like the jazz brunch, as I was saying, that's it's a trio of musicians walk around to each of these rooms. They play several songs before going to the next room. I mean, they have to sort of hightail it to get they have multiple bands playing, by the way. I figured that out last time because I know one of the trumpet players was coming down from upstairs and he's like, "You guys leaving? Where are you sitting?" I'm like, "No, we're leaving now, but I didn't know you were upstairs." But it's cool because the kids love that, you know, if you're sitting there and you're eating your meal and they come around playing like New Orleans classics, they take requests, you tip them, and, it's fun. It's obviously an added bonus. And like, I think we all can agree that's one of the best things about New Orleans. You can have the greatest food and then some awesome music at the same time. You can't beat that.
Yeah. And they're not blaring the music at you. It's a nice kind of more of a mellow morning acoustic jazz. Yeah, all acoustic, nice. So it just kind of really makes for a nice, warm, calming atmosphere there to enjoy your meal and enjoy the company.
Yeah, I think you said it, strolling musicians.
Yeah.
And it's I have had several people I've taken there for their birthdays. And it is a classic place to have birthdays because if you do sort of set up a reservation for a birthday, you will walk in and they will have a table set up for you with balloons and they give you a chef's hat for the birthday girl or boy, whatever.
Oh, nice.
And it's always, I don't know. That's one thing I love about the Brennan restaurants is that they all do that. Brennan's is really awesome too. If you ever want to take your kid or your mom or whoever to a restaurant that you get some bang for your buck for saying it's your birthday, take them to Brennan's and or Commander's Palace, but Brennan's, you actually get this huge pile of cotton candy and underneath that is the cake and ice cream. And then you give you a cool Brennan's apron. So that is something that family does really well. And like, it's a party, it's New Orleans and that's what they do best. So it's fun to do that.
I was going to say, well, you always go down there around November for Lily's birthday. We'll have to do that. We'll have to do that for her on the next run.
Yeah, no, it's really fun, yeah. And it's a cool added bonus there.
There's no way I would get Charlotte to go down for her birthday in August, but I will have to say, I can say hands down on her behalf that she would say that Commander's is her number one restaurant in New Orleans.
Yeah, no, it is, and I think, you know, I think we've all talked about this. You know, there's the criteria for restaurants when we're reviewing restaurants in New Orleans is very high, and it's sort of like picking, you know, the greatest luxury car or whatever, you know, there's everyone can have a different opinion and whatever. But if you're talking about overall package, you're talking experience, you're talking food, you're talking drinks, you're talking just the history, all that package, you cannot beat Commander's Palace. It is number one with a bullet to me. I can sit here and tell you that there's another restaurant I would have an equally good meal or, you know, possibly an experience sort of like it, but I don't know. The experience is so high there that it is number one. I mean, is there anything, do you guys agree with that? Is there anything close?
No, I would say pretty easily I'd rank that number one.
Yeah, I'd rank it number one. And as we've talked, you know, we've discussed on other episodes, the total package. And so we've talked about the quality of the food, the service, how you're welcomed into that restaurant, it's a more unassuming building from the outside than you realize, but it's beautiful inside. But as we've touched on other ones, excellent bathrooms. So always make sure, man, that we note that. Yeah.
The Brennan restaurants have awesome bathrooms and they're all on different floors and they're all like, you know, tiled out, marbled out. I mean, they all look great. But Commander's Palace is one of the best restaurants in the world. And if you are in New Orleans, you have to check it out. The only negative to Commander's Palace that I can ever say is that sometimes I'm like, I don't want to do it on this trip because if you really want to take it all in, it will take half a day. It'll take 3 to 4 hours to get ready because obviously, you know, the guys, you can just throw on something real quick for the most part. The girls like to get all foo-fooed up for the big meal over there. So then you go, you usually an Uber ride from the French Quarter. And, you know, if you want to take your time, if it's your meal of the day, you're going to have an appetizer. You're going to have that turtle soup. You're going to have that quail. And maybe you're going to share, you know, man, they have the souffle or the strawberry shortcake. They have some great desserts that we haven't talked about either. But if you're going to take all that time, oh, by the way, I'm going to add those 3 martinis as well. If you really want to soak it all in, you're there for like 3-4 hours.
Yeah, and it's an event. It's an event.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, like I was saying about these, you know, Michelin star restaurants. it's putting, again, back that level, and I'd say dollar for dollar, you're getting a much bigger return at Commanders than almost anywhere else, because it is a half a day event, at least. You can make it a full day event when you take in the whole experience of getting there and wandering around afterward, because I've never walked out of there feeling stuffed, always just incredibly happy with what I ate, but then enjoying the walk afterwards.
You're absolutely right. That's a perfect way to end it. Well, Commander's Palace is one of the greatest restaurants in the world. Check it out, commanderspalace.com, and you need to go over to the Garden District and enjoy probably the greatest meal and experience you'll ever have in your life, bar none. And I think we've all been around a lot, and we think it's all that. So check it out, Commander's Palace. Thanks for joining us on this episode of NOLA Outsider, and we will see you next time. I don't know what our topic's going to be. It's going to be we'll have to kick it around. But it's going to be something just as, maybe not as great as Commander's Palace, but really close. Thanks for joining us here this week on the show.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the NOLA Outsider podcast. We'd love to hear about your experiences in the greatest city in the world. Email us at outsidernola@gmail.com. Also, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/NOLAOutsider. Or visit NOLAOutsider.com. See you next time on NOLA Outsider.